Welcome to the Maine Reader on Maine Airs, the Maine Audio Information and Reading Service, a program of the IRIS Network serving Maine's blind and visually impaired. My name is Cynthia Bowman, and I'm reading The Log of the Skipper's Wife, the diary of Dorothea Moulton Bellano, edited by her son, James W. Bellano. We've read only one previous episode of this book, but what a spunky real-life character our diarist is. Dorothea Moulton is now sailing back to the United States from a year's teaching in Puerto Rico. She and her friend Betty are aboard the R.W. Hopkins, with Betty's handsome boyfriend, Captain Bellano, at the helm. While Betty is seasick, Dorothea and the captain spend a great deal of time together. We're in the midst of our diarist report on July 7th, 1910. Let's listen to what happens next. The captain cornered me for sunset coffee and stayed on deck with me, talking about his home at Port Clyde, Maine. Was he trying to woo? I've nothing to say about what followed. Nothing to say, my daughter. Guess I'll spend these heavenly days on top of the after-deck house, where the view is mutually good. I can see the beautiful sea, and everyone else can see what goes on between the two deck chairs. I do wish Betty would get well. It's I, now, who needs the chaperone. Saw by the chart that we're nearly halfway to Boston. I wonder if my Carolina refund will be awaiting me. When the captain asks me about my plans, I get him to teach me seamanship. The gaffs are the upper booms on the larger sails. Dog watches from 4 to 6 and 6 to 8 are stood in order to change the watches so that the two watches will rotate each day. All this is not only interesting, but also gets his nibs and me through the long tea or coffee on top of the after deck house. Friday, July 8th, 1910, latitude 30 north, longitude 68 west. Passed the SS Ponce, bound for Puerto Rico from New York. She whistled to us, and we saluted by dipping the ensign. How's that for success in my seamanship classes? But less success in my latest romance. What liars these sea captains are! Each day I change my mind about him. Sunday, July 10th, 1910. At sea a week today. Almost becalmed this morning as the trade winds played out. Had early morning coffee with the captain. Isn't that doing well for one who started to detest him? But there's no doubt he's all man, and, after Don Jorge and his ilk, that's something. A rent was torn in the spanker sail last night, and at 3 bells, or 1:30 in the morning, I went on deck to see it lowered. Now the men are mending it atop the deckhouse, and I have no place to sit, so I'll take a promenade along forward over the deck cargo and watch the dolphins race us. They're delightful, and apparently talk to each other with delightful squeals. Becalmed, and the booms creak and shake about the masts for want of wind. How I do enjoy my saltwater plunge every morning. Got Betty to take one, and it spruced her up so that she's finally made it up to the deck chairs, where the captain is jollying her. The poor darling can stand a lot of it. Superstitious captain threw an old pair of shoes into the sea to bring wind. Shades of Ulysses. July 12th, 1910. Wind changed to the west, tacking ship. All hands on deck, ease off your brail lines, let fore, main and mizzen, come over. Over with your jibs, loosen the spanker tackle. That's well, now let her go port a half point more, steer north, northeast. Spanker sail down again today for more repairs, hoisted a new fore topsail. Putting on stronger sails for the strong westerlies. I took pictures up forward today and got Betty to do so also. A glorious sunset, and the Hopkins family, or should I say ménage à trois, stayed on deck to watch the moon sink into the sea like the disappearance of a pink and rose seashell. Betty was tired and went below. I can only say, as a result of her leaving and my staying, whom the gods destroy, they first make mad. And try to remember that, my dear. July 13th. Let go the spanker sheet and haul out on the boom tackles. Let go the jib sheets and let the jibs go over the stays. Captain stopped the clock today while tacking, so that the man at the wheel could stay a half hour longer, so as not to take a man from handling the sails. When the poor fellow complained, the captain scolded him for sleeping at the wheel. The detestable lack of logic. On deck all day, enjoying the change from tropical weather to the billowing blue-gray of northern seas, the sun shamefacedly peering from behind dismal clouds, and the air cool enough for sweaters. June 14th, July 14th, 1910. That villainous captain has me all mixed up. A school of whales this morning, also a huge three-masted square rigger bound out for wonderful Europe. Maybe I'll yet get there. That's one consideration in any decision about marrying a seagoing man. She was a beautiful ship. A Norwegian, says the skipper. July 15th, 1910. A squall last night. I was sleepy with all the fresh air and retired early. Was it premonition? The captain and Betty stayed on deck. He broke the news to her. I wonder. He woke me before dawn and looked so huge and reliable in his old black sou'wester and oilskins. The sea was phosphorescent, and the good schooner cut through the lighted billows with a zip. Captain told me I must be feeling at home if I could sleep through such a rushing squall with which he had to contend most of the night. It tore away the main topsail, and now we have a headwind out of the northwest, which retards our progress materially. Will it be Boston on Sunday? And will my little 100 be there, I wonder? Sunday, July 17th. It is not Boston, but a good northeaster is blowing us along wonderfully. Still, something like 100 miles to go. No sun for sights. Tuesday, July 19th. Still at sea. Going north in some channel or other to get around Cape Cod. Reached Nantucket Light Sunday evening, and I've been freezing ever since. Bad weather. No sun, no wind, tide rips, choppy sea. Bah! And I don't know what the captain and Betty are up to now. I see where yours truly, to preserve her peace of mind, will have to cultivate the embroidery habit and the solitaire habit on this schooner. These sea captains! A school of mackerel yesterday and one of cod today. Many two-masted fishing schooners around us. Past Cape Cod Light. Some steamers bound for Europe, and several large sailing ships. The seamen are scraping the bits, preparing to varnish them for docking. July 30th. En route for home and Mama. Arrived in Boston Friday, a long week ago, and oh, wasn't it good to see the States. On deck early in the morning to greet the towboat and Boston Harbor with its forts, a revenue cutter, and steamers from Maine and New York, houses with strangely peaked roofs to shed the snows I'd nearly forgotten, houses with more windows and short green grass lawns, unlike the luxurious vegetation of the tropics. But being in the States again, and Boston at that, and I got my check from the ship chandlers. Nearly all of it went to pay for excess baggage for my trunks to get to Minnesota. Boston is a dear old town, and we had such a dinner. Never will I forget that first dinner in the States for over 2 years. Such steak, such salad, and such apple pie, a la mode. The intellectual waitress who served us was amazed at my calling the repast ambrosia and nectar of the gods. Boston-like, she said it was material stuff with which to nourish our coy oral entities. Then to Captain Bellano's home at Port Clyde, Maine. a long drive in his father's regal auto to Booth Bay, where we took a little mailboat to Monhegan and Port Clyde, a beautiful spot of granite rocks, evergreens, and much salt water. Fred's home is too dear for words, and I knew it at once from the pictures. Met Captain Archibald, who owns a fleet of coastal steamers. He told me, while Fred was somewhere exploring the boat, that Fred always brought home nice new girls. I replied that during the trip north I had counted over 41 of them, from his lies, and then got tired. Monhegan's cliffs impressed me more than the 41 girls, as did the lighthouse and the blueberry pie we had on Sunday. Visited his grandmother in the woods, and she asked, "Be you from here, or be you from away?" Pure Devon dialect, although her ancestors have been here since the beginnings. She used to go by sloop to meet her seagoing husband at Salem. On Monday, Fred drove me to Rockland, and then on to Boston that night. He sails a ship much better than an auto. I don't know how, but we made it. He tacked and beat to windward most of the way, much to the consternation of several drivers of horses and oxen. That lovely Mrs. Hopkins took me all over Boston, the Common, and the Frog Pond, where the British soldiers placed ashes to ruin the boys' skating, the Toboggan Run, where General Gates made his soldiers let the boys slide, saw the Shaw Monument, and the flags in Memorial Hall at the State House. Something for a descendant of the Mayflower Brewsters and Bradfords to conjure with. I must remember to tell Mama, who tried to tell me of these things without ever having seen them herself. I must be more attentive to my heritage. Saw the tattered emblems of 100 Massachusetts regiments commemorating the noble work of a half-dozen wars, the codfish of the Gloucestermen, Fred's ancestors. There is a safe which holds the Mayflower's log brought from England after 20 years' negotiations by Senator Hoar. Saw his tomb at Concord in the Sleepy Hollow Cemetery. It has a grand epitaph, quote, "I do not believe in destiny or blind force. I believe in the living God and the American people. I believe that today is better than yesterday, and that tomorrow will be better than today." End quote. After the past 2 years fraught with Latin fatalism, that is refreshing. As Fred said during the trip, "I make my own luck." Hawthorne's grave contains a small headpiece about as large as this page. Editor's note, the diary page is 6 by 8 inches. Emerson's is a rough stone with a small bronze tablet, and by his side is his wife's, topped by a bas-relief of tulips, a beautiful thing. Alcott's and Thoreau's are plain, large stones, Concord style, the style which I now see was carried west by such pioneers as my grandparents, who set up little Concords all through the country. Mrs. Hopkins told me that the bones of the British soldiers buried near the Common had been dug up when the subway was laid. Am I growing a bunion? Fred and I lunched at Marston's with Alice Hatch and her husband. Such chicken pie! Never will I forget Boston cooking, or that delicious chocolate pie in Portland. In the afternoon to the public library. More bunions. Saw French's Lions, Sargent's Law and Prophets, the frieze of the Holy Grail recalling the opera Parsifal. There is a newspaper room containing papers in many languages, Greek, Spanish, French, Jewish, and I suppose North Polar. At the art museum there was a good Lerolle, some Romneys, not to mention a Buddha, whom I saluted in true Catholic Puerto Rican style. Not so many pictures as New York, but wonderful. Boston needs some Goulds and Vanderbilts to purchase more old treasures for her. New Englanders don't part from their money too easily, as I noticed at Port Clyde when Fred's mother paid off an errand boy with a half-rotten apple. At Bliss's, the ship chandler got a note from Betty, wishing me all happiness. She said she was writing the story of her life. I can't take the time to do that. Had a supper of raspberries at the Hatches, and how Fred did eat! Somehow got Fred to the theater twice. He was so bored that each time he went out to talk to the policeman on the corner at intermission and did not return. Do I civilize him, or is it hopeless? I wonder about this future of ours together. Perhaps Betty would be better for him after all. She doesn't get bunions or do too much exploring or get enchanted with plays, opera, and books. Changed reservations so as to have a last evening with Fred and his friends on the schooner. He begged me to, saying he wanted to impress somebody with the fact that an old salt like him could land a girl who'd been to college and knew the difference between the sharp and dull ends of a ship. Caught the late train for Buffalo by 1 minute after saying goodbye to both Captain Crowell and Mr. Thurlow, shipowners, who have part of Fred's vessel as well as many others. Fred gave me a picture of the Hopkins as a going-away present. Am I ever going to see her again? Still wondering, knowing him. Saw Niagara, but was moved to profanity I'd learned from Fred at the sight of the tough and uncouth crowds. Betty would have said there's a difference between a gloved and veiled crowd and one ungloved and unveiled. Oh, my boy, my handsome boy, why do people ever have to part? And here begins a new chapter of my log. Let us hope it will have as much good fortune and the good Lord's blessing as this one has. July 31st, 1910. On board steamer Northwest, bound for Duluth. How she shakes and smokes should not be afforded the seaman's loving she, but should be... The thing shakes and smokes not at all like a beautiful sailing ship. Fred would be disgusted. Shall I ever see my Fred again? I wonder, and si Dios quiere, I shall soon know of his sincerity. God grant that he does as he promised, and we will have years together of happiness. If he means what he said, all will be well, even with hard knocks now and then. May 14, 1911. Aguirre, Puerto Rico, on board the Hopkins. How I hate to keep a diary! That's evident from the date of the preceding entry. Nearly a year has passed. Meanwhile, a few things happened. We were married, believe it or not. It was a private but beautiful ceremony conducted at the home of Fred's cousin, Alice Bellano Davidson, in Melrose, Massachusetts. Her husband, Herbert, a great musician who sells hams, sang for us the appropriate tunes. Fred, typically, arrived late, having been spending the day hunting for my mislaid trunk, which contained my self-made trousseau. He also was scouring the town of Boston for a cook who could not only open cans but also make fudge. He said I'd have more important things to do. I must have registered some shock at that statement, but he was quick to reassure me. Said I'd be helping him with ship's accounts and navigation. It was a relief to know that he didn't plan to keep me confined to the bed. Still, I wonder, these down east skippers. When we arrived from Boston at Aguirre for molasses after a record passage, imagine what the Boston Herald will write about Fred making the shortest passage ever on his honeymoon, a trip that might have been purposely prolonged. That nice Mr. MacDonald presented me with this notebook for resuming my diary. It seems that I once showed him a part of my old diary in order to prove some point or other about a previous visit. Or was it the sailing date of Betty's and mine when we embarked from Aguirre, me as chaperone? Ha! Anyway, here we are, and here is my diary again for me to use as a relief valve when things go wrong or when something happens that should be recorded for explaining to my children the whims and waywardness of their roving parents. We've had nothing but rain and more rain here in sunny Puerto Rico. But parties, parties, fiestas, and fiestas. Everyone has used our wedding for celebrations. The Ponce Bomberos, in their red uniforms, met us as we came into Aguirre with a display of their fire hoses, spraying streams of water all over Fred's fresh white paint. Scores of acquaintances roasted scores of piglets for the cookouts. I now speak with oinks, and am so stuffed that friends think I'm pregnant already and maybe had to get married. The big bark, on away, is anchored astern of us to load after we do, and the crew has been drunk all week on the free rum they swiped at the parties given for Fred and me. They think I'm wonderful. I am, however, no longer a passenger and honored guest. Now I feel like a member of the crew. Washing, cleaning, sewing. What in hell do we have a steward for? What happens if I mutiny? Wednesday, May 17th, 1911. Rain. Went to Dona Linda's to get my blue skirt made. Such mud, oh, such mud. State's mail came on SS Carolina, reminding me that I once had a ticket to go north on her. Should I have? Heavenly dinner at the Chisholms. She's no longer trying to pry, because she's got a fait accompli to think about. One plus, at least. Thursday, May 18th, 1911. Never try to predict what a man will do. Today, Fred helped me with the washing. Then we took a sailor's holiday by sailing for several hours among the islands and over toward the booming breakers of snowy surf. How Fred loves to sail, and so do I. Wouldn't it be perfect if he liked opera, too? Tuesday, May 23rd, 1911. Went in our launch 29 miles to Ponce as guests of the Kents on board the Governor Powers. We're to stay a few days with those lovely people. Fresh milk, so good for my hoped-for little baby. Wednesday, May 24th, 1911. Lovely shopping spree in Ponce. New shirts for Fred and lace for me. Went bathing on the playa in the afternoon. Wanted to return to the shops for a baby's trousseau, but Fred said it could wait. Please God, all will go well. I do wish Fred wanted a dear little baby as much as I do. Thursday, May 25th, 1911. Heavenly dinner of lecon asado, with all the fixins, at the Melia, and tea at Miss Cudahy's, where I saw all my old friends. Mrs. Groves and Miss Rideout from Boston are dears, and Baby Groves is a perfect darling, although Fred seemed afraid of him. Sewed some of the beautiful Ponce lace on my chemise, and then rode to the hills for the evening freshness with Miss Cudahy, who may sail north on the Powers. With Captain and Mrs. Kent, she should have a nice, quiet, peaceful trip compared to my chaperonage of Betty and Fred. Jiminy, what a chaperone did yours truly turn out to be. Selah. Sunday, May 28th, 1911. Picnic at Caja de Muertos and 18 miles back in the launch. Saw the Kents and other old friends. Took Miss Cudahy and Miss Ryan along with two of the young villains from the Central. The above entry should have been made for Sunday a week ago. An indication of my losing a sense of time? Or is it the change from being an honored, guest to being a crew member? The captain found fault with my cake frosting and the fudge I made, as he does with everything I do. Why did I marry? Today went to Mehrhoff's for lunch with Alice Hatch as our guest. Later we all went bathing. It was good to be able to talk with Alice. She was so nice to me in Boston, showing me around. Reviewing our days there together helped take my mind off Fred and the frosting and fudge. We talked of how we took the electric car from Boston to Concord. There's a powder house we saw on the way, at Somerville, I believe, containing cannons used in the Revolutionary and Civil Wars. Its tower flew the first American flag. We recalled the Green at Lexington and Monroe Tavern, where stands the stone Minuteman commemorating the first shot heard round the world. Then we dined at the Wright Tavern. My beautiful Concord, so peacefully green, such calmly dignified trees, oaks, and evergreens, and such an air of leisurely gentleness, and, best of all, the Minuteman done by French. He is leaving the plow and taking up his gun. 'Tis a long retreat they had from Lexington to Concord, and so heroic. But what did that scoundrel of a husband say when he overheard Alice and I reminiscing? Good they left Lexington before it was conquered. A typical fifth-grade smart-aleck joke. He takes nothing seriously but ships and food. And the old manse, sacred to Hawthorne and Emerson. It is now in the former's family, and the public are not admitted. Nor did it seem less human to see a perfectly modern baby carriage on the lawn in front. Emerson's white, green-shuttered home is also still in the family. His study is preserved. Further on is the Alcott house and the Ellen tree, now neglected and falling to ruin. God bless the author of Little Women. Fred probably thinks they were a group of Panamanian pygmies, like the short San Blas Indians he ships as crew. I wonder if I can ever get him to read some other book than Bowditch, The Tide Tables, and The Ship's Log. Monday, May 26, 1911. A perfectly fiendish day. Awful. Worked myself to death on not only my wash, but also Fred's and half of the steward's tablecloths, taking medicine and suffering. Ought I to have married? My new dress is done and is quite suitable. Blue linen. Fred said it made me look good. That's a rare compliment. Downeasters are parted less readily from their compliments than from their money, so I took it that way. I do love my boy. But how cross I get with him at times. Perhaps he needs someone like me who shows a bit of spirit once in a while. But I do wish the good Lord would make me a better girl. We have so much. That's all we have time for in this edition of the Maine Reader. We're reading The Log of the Skipper's Wife, the diary of Dorothea Moulton Bellano, edited by her son, James W. Bellano. I'm Cynthia Bowman. Thank you for listening.